From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Pleasanton. Fall Town.
Richmond. Sunset.
Coming up, we don't just look at what's under your couch, we look at what's in it.
If your chair was 50% flame retardants, that would work, but you wouldn't be very comfortable sitting on it, and the potential health effects would be really serious.
Then we spend some time at one of the Bay Area's fire lookouts.
I come for either two-day or three-day shifts. You take your own food, but there's plenty of water up there. It's filtered.
And we search the skies for this week's audiograph sound.
I saw them when I walk to work. There's a couple of like poplar trees that they sit at the top of, and it's quite lovely to see them because they are spectacularly colored, green with a little bit of red.
Polly, want a story? You're in the right place. It's Cross Currents. We'll get into our first story with the help of our engineers, Seth Samuel and Chris Hoff.
Hello. Hi.
All right, boys. Have you ever lifted up a couch cushion to get the pocket change and ballpoint pens that find their way inside?
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Of course you have. We all have. Well, inside the couch, you might have noticed a little tag printed with the code TB117.
TB117? What's that?
Basically, this little tag tells you something that's been added to your couch, or more specifically, to the foam it's stuffed with. We're talking about flame retardants, chemicals that keep the couch from catching on fire if a candle falls on it or a cigarette.
Wait, isn't that a good thing?
Well, for the past 40 years, some scientists have been saying these chemicals are bad for us. They could lower fertility rates in adults and IQs in children, and they could even cause cancer.
Yikes.
Right. So, in response, politicians like State Senator Mark Leno are helping rewrite the standards for what goes into our furniture. The California standard is pretty much the default throughout the country. Change couches here, and you'll most likely change them everywhere. So, we wanted to know exactly how bad are these chemicals, and what would any change to the law actually mean? Reporter Eric Newman got off his own couch to find out.
Arlene Bloom and I are standing in an upscale furniture store in Berkeley. The showroom is full of brightly colored chairs and couches, purple, gray, and blue, with whimsical patterns and elegant modern lines.
So I guess it's pretty much the same between all different pieces of furniture.
Yeah,
it's that
like
same.
These kinds you can't really see, but I bet if we picked it up and turned it over on the bottom.
Bloom is the executive director of the Green Science Policy Institute. They're an independent research group that studies the chemicals used in household products. She also used to be a chemist at UC Berkeley. That's where she studied flame retardants, including one called Tris that appeared to change DNA and possibly caused cancer. Back in the 70s, her work got these chemicals out of kids' pajamas. They used to be used commonly. Now she's trying to get them out of furniture.
There we go. Let's look at this nice chair.
Bloom's tall, with long gray hair, and most of the time has a big smile on her face. When she looks around this store, though, she isn't smiling.
This article meets the flammability requirements of the California Bureau of Home Furnishings Technical Bulletin 117.
The offending item is a comfortable living room chair covered with dark purple fabric and filled with either chlorinated Tris or something called Firemaster. Both chemicals are toxic. And Bloom says,
basically, the chemicals, the way they're used in furniture, do not help.
In other words, there's enough to make you sick, but not enough to actually stop a fire.
In fact, if you wanted the chemicals to work against a small open flame, your chair would have to be about 50% flame retardants. If your chair was 50% flame retardants, that would work, but you wouldn't be very comfortable sitting on it, and the potential health effects would be really serious.
Right now, California furniture makers, like the ones who make the stuff in this store, have to use chemical flame retardants. State law says that foam in couches has to withstand an open flame for a few seconds. The chemicals help it pass that test, but once a fire catches, they stop working. Even so, the rest of the country pretty much uses the same standards because they want to sell stuff in California too. California State Senator Mark Leno is trying to change those standards.
Hence the need for this bill. It gives consumers fire-safe choice in their purchasing decisions.
The new standards will still require furniture to be fire-safe, but they'll change the test. so that just the outside cover of furniture has to withstand a smoldering flame like a cigarette. That's a common cause of fires, and it has nothing to do with foam, so manufacturers won't need the chemicals. And if they can save money by using one less ingredient, that's probably what will happen. At this point, the science is pretty clear, and the changes are supported by pretty much everyone involved, like furniture makers, the foam industry, medical associations, California politicians, even firefighters, who are often exposed to chemicals and smoke. The only people who don't support them are the ones who make the flame retardants. That company, Chemtura, are based in Connecticut. They weren't willing to be interviewed, but their communications manager, John Gustafson, offered this statement.
By taking this action, the Bureau is setting back fire safety in California. We will be disappointed if this misguided proposal to lower fire safety standards actually becomes law. Efforts to eliminate the open flame standard are in direct opposition to the views of Californians and independent fire safety experts, who support strict flammability standards, which have been proven to prevent fires and save lives.
After leaving the furniture store, I head back to my house for a closer look at my own couch. It's tan with flecks of gold and probably came from a thrift shop, and it does kind of send up puffs of dust every time I sit on it. I've never looked, but sure enough, under the cushion is a TB117 tag. I start thinking harder about those puffs of dust I'm breathing in. Even if the standards change, old chemical-filled couches like this one will still be around. So how bad is that dust for my lungs? And is there something I can do to avoid it? I'm happy to get up and go find out.
So we're in my office, and the first thing that likely has chemical flame retardants, but I have no way of knowing this, and that's a big part of the problem, is my very comfy office chair that's ergonomically designed to help me stay productive and free of low back pain.
This is Ami Zota. She's a postdoctoral scholar who studies reproductive health at UC San Francisco. She's been studying chemical flame retardants since 2007, and I'm hoping she'll tell me what I'm exposing myself to when I sit on my own couch, or really any couch.
Studies on brain cells and studies in animals, as well as studies in, you know, populations of California kids, have shown that these chemicals can affect the way the brain develops, even leading to reduced IQ points.
Arlene Bloom says they've also been linked to increased obesity and anxiety, low birth weights in children, and reduced fertility in adults. When I bring this up, Zota confirms it and says there are other long-term effects too.
These chemicals persist in our bodies for like a decade. They persist in the environment, you know, in our waterways, in they end up in the Arctic, you know, in the northern countries, and we end up having to deal with the ramifications of these harmful chemicals for many years to come.
In 2009, a UN convention listed several chemical flame retardants as persistent organic pollutants. The flame retardants used today are in the same family, but we know a lot less about them. And either way, both the old ones and the new ones are still all around us in our daily lives. I confess to Zota that I don't know what to do, short of never sitting down again.
There are some things you can do, like you can wash your hands frequently, you can try to be more vigilant about the way you clean to reduce dust. You can try to buy certain products that would have less of these chemicals. But this is a problem that requires collective action, because you can't shop your way out of this problem, or you can't clean your way out of this problem, because you're not in control of so many of the environments that you exist in.
Back in my house, I look at my couch, my office chair, my mattress, my rug, all of which have TB117 tags. And even though I know Zota's right, I decide it might be a good time to start dusting. In Oakland, I'm Eric Newman for Cross Currents.
What kind of chemicals are you most worried about in your home, and what are you doing about it? Leave a message on our feedback line, 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106, and we might play it on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Flame retardants may be used on small flammables like couches and other furniture, but how do you prevent fires on a much, much larger scale? This morning, wildfires blazed across wine country, leading Napa and Sonoma counties to announce an earlier-than-usual official start to the fire season. It's usually in June. During this dry season, as many as 50 volunteer fire watchers take shifts in outposts located high above San Francisco Bay. For instance, at the top of Mount Tam is a little shack up on stilts, just that much higher above the peak where it sits. It's called the Gardner Lookout, and it's one of two fire lookout towers in Marin County. The fire watchers spend days and nights in a room with the windows instead of walls, using old brass instruments, maps, a two-way radio, and a box of dog-eared 3x5 note cards, looking for smoke in an uninterrupted 360-degree view of the Bay Area. Fire spotters have been working in the Mount Tam lookout since the 1930s. They've spotted fires in Larkspur, in Hicks Valley, and in 2012, a fire watch volunteer saw the giant plumes of smoke from the San Bruno pipeline explosion. KALW's Julie Kane visited the lookout on Mount Tam to see what the fire watchers see.
Up this high, above the fog line, there aren't houses or corner stores or office towers.
You take your own food, but there's plenty of water up there. It's filtered.
This is Gary Yost. He's a volunteer fire watcher. Besides the parking lot and the lookout, the only other man-made structures he sees are an array of antenna and satellite dishes and a white dome on a peak in the near distance. What are those for?
Oh, that's microwave communications for cell phone companies and TV and radio stations and just corporate data networks, high-speed internet stuff. And then that's the FAA radome, the Federal Aviation Authority's air traffic control radars in there. I think the Air Force uses that too still.
Yeah, I can pick up the... I hear it.
Sure.
This sound. Above us, the sky is crisscrossed with an intricate array of long white airplane contrails, fading and drifting into the cloudless bright blue. Below us...
So you can see here we've got the Corte Madera Ridge, and then beyond it is Tiburon and Belvedere, Angel Island, and Richmond Bay, and there's San Quentin and the Richmond Bay Bridge. And it's all just happening, and you can barely hear a rumble of the traffic on 101, but you can hear it. It's the sound of 7 million people.
What's so special about this place is not just what you can hear, it's what you can see. This is one of the best places in the Bay Area to spot fires.
And the lookout was dedicated in May of 1937.
The lookout building is a rugged tower built of stone and wood and ringed by a catwalk. It's protected from intruders by rolls of gleaming razor wire.
And it's solid, I mean... This door weighs 300 pounds, and the rock is 2 to 3 feet thick.
To keep it from burning in a fire.
Okay, so let's go inside. Okay, after you.
In the base of the lookout are shelves of supplies, a refrigerator, a shower stall, and a steep, narrow staircase with a warning sign that says, danger, climbing can cause severe injury.
I don't think it's the climbing that causes the injury, though. It's the falling part. So here we are.
Inside the wow.
Yeah. Yeah, the nicest room in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's pretty sweet.
It's breathtaking.
Oh my goodness.
On a clear day, you can see as far as 60 or 70 miles in all directions.
What are you looking for?
So you're looking for a column of smoke.
The fire watchers are the first to spot a couple of fires every year. They also monitor fires and keep firefighters updated on how well containment efforts are working.
If you see a smoke, then you use this thing here called the Osborne Fire Finder, which is in every single fire lookout pretty much in the world.
The Osborne Fire Finder is a brass measuring device that looks like it could be a navigational instrument on an old sailing ship. It rotates above a circular map of the Bay Area, kind of like a flattened globe, perched on a tall tabletop at the center of the room. This is what volunteers like Yost use to pinpoint a fire's location.
It'll tell you pretty much where on the vertical the fire is, and you put your eye in this little teeny tiny hole. I mean, this hole is probably a 32nd of an inch across, and you line up one of those two crosshairs on the other side with the smoke, and you rotate the whole unit, which rotates very smoothly, along a 360 degree marked base.
Once the volunteer gets the fire's coordinates, he flips through
this really high-tech 3x5 card file.
The cards are well worn. Some are typed, some are written in pen. They match up coordinates with landmarks. Some are well known and easy to identify. Others, not so much.
Here's the Chicken Shack Fire Road, which runs along that ridge from Big Rock Ridge easterly towards Pacheco Valley. The Chicken Shack Fire Road.
Yvonne 11 commercial fire alarm.
When they know where the fire is, the volunteers call it in on a two-way radio. It's always on, chattering in the background.
He's a 40-year-old male, holding unconscious back there.
During the day, the volunteers have lots of company. The summit of Mount Tam is a popular spot. People come for that spectacular view. After dark and early in the morning, though, the volunteers have the mountaintop all to themselves.
The sunrise up here starts real early in the summer. You know, 4 o'clock, you can start to see light come into the sky, and there's all sorts of amazing visual effects that the rising sun has on the fog. So if you're really lucky, the fog will be fully in at sunrise, and you'll get that feeling of complete isolation. And if the fog has come in the night before you've gone to sleep, or maybe you've woken up in the middle of the night, or maybe you haven't gone to sleep at all, what you see underneath the fog are these shifting lights underneath the fog. So San Francisco and Marin County in the East Bay become kind of an underwater light show. And then if the fog is really, really deep, you don't see any of the lights of the Bay Area, but then the stars are as bright as the stars in the middle of the desert.
A desert of 7 million people and one volunteer perched on the mountaintop watching over us, looking for smoke. At the top of Mount Tam, I'm Julie Kane for Cross Currents.
If you'd like to see a video of the Mount Tam lookout, go to our website, kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now we'll leave Mount Tam and go to a place that's the answer to our weekly Sonic Treasure Hunt audiograph. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound. A lot of you called in on this one, and we just love hearing your guesses, so we thought we'd play you a few.
First voice message.
Parrot off the telegraph hill.
Those jaunty little green fluttery parrots of
Telegraph Hill, chili-headed parrot.
It sounded like a bird. I'm not sure what kind of bird.
There are these little birds in the San Francisco Zoo.
The zoo in San Francisco.
Parrots.
Wild parrots on
Telegraph Hill.
Wild parrots at
Telegraph Hill.
Wild parrots. And I'm guessing that they are in Jefferson Square.
I have seen them fly over the CPMC Davies Medical Center.
Of course, it's parrots.
Of Telegraph Hill. Most definitely.
I think it's the parrots of Knob Hill.
The wild parrots on Telegraph Hill, but I'm not sure, and I just wanted to try my luck.
End of new messages.
To find out more about this week's sound, we sent KALW's Leela Day on a sonic quest. Ever since I moved to San Francisco 2 years ago, I've been told about the wild parrots of Telegraph Hill. Lots of people claim to have seen and heard them in their backyards, but they're most famous for hanging around the gardens up by Coit Tower. So I decided to spend a day here, trying to track them down.
Hello. Did you just hear the parrots fly overhead?
Parrots.
Did you hear them? You guys know?
Yeah, sorry.
Parrots.
Really?
I was once told by a native San Franciscan that it would sound like 1,000 screaming babies flying toward me. And these birds, they don't sound like that.
Have you heard about the wild parrots of Telegraph?
The green ones.
Yes.
Yes, our daughter said they're all...
I think they're green. I feel kind of ridiculous, but I do really want to find them. So I just keep walking up to strangers, asking if they've seen these birds.
They've just been sitting right up here, and they flew down into this tree.
Oh, wow. I just missed them, huh?
Yeah, obviously.
Oh.
Okay, this is getting exhausting. I've just climbed up and down about 200 stairs, but I'm not leaving Telegraph Hill until I find them. I see a man jogging, so I stop him.
I saw them when I walk to work. There's a couple of like poplar trees that they sit at the top of, and it's quite lovely to see them because they are spectacularly colored, green with a little bit of red.
It's even harder to find these birds because I can't just offer them bird seed and have them land on my shoulder. That's now illegal. We aren't supposed to feed the wild parrots. Up ahead on Telegraph Hill, I see a man working in the garden near his house. His name is Julian Chetniff.
Whenever they wake up, they fly through here, go somewhere in San Francisco, and come back about 4 or 5. In another hour, half hour, you'll hear them. They just swarm around here, really. Just right at this moment, because you're here, nothing's happening.
I know. I've been trying to find them, and I can't.
Oh, you'll hear them before you see them, and they'll be by the dozens.
I see them.
I take a seat on a step and look up into the trees. The green birds are hopping from branch to branch like little monkeys, drowning out the sounds of the cars below. Some people walk by and don't even look up. Then I see a guy wearing a leather cowboy hat. He's definitely looking up. His name is Chris Vardian, and he's a tour guide who's cutting through the garden on his way home.
Nobody knows exactly where they came from. You know, people think it was probably escaped pets or something, but nobody really knows. It started with just a few, and now there are hundreds living here wild. They just go where they decide to. You know, the city's not that big, 7 miles by 7 miles, so they'll go just about anywhere. Anywhere there's nice, you know, places to roost and hang out.
Though it didn't take me as long as I thought to find these parrots, the search for the little green creatures makes San Francisco feel a little bit more wild. On Telegraph Hill, I'm Leela Day.
Well, many of you called with great guesses, but there's only one winner, and that's Edison Andrade. Congratulations, Edison. We'll be sending you a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, there will be another contest next week. In the meantime, go to KALW.org to hear more from Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. And that does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes Julie Kane, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Alex Kaminsky, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Daphne Matsiaraki, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Christine Stolakis. Today's show was engineered by Eva Sonsin. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our managing editor. Our executive editor is Ben Trefney. Holly Kernan is our news director. And today we bid a farewell to volunteer R.J. Sloan. All the best, R.J.
Bye, R.J. We'll miss you.
Thanks to City Car Share, which provides an alternative transportation option for our reporters. They're online at citycarshare.org. And thank you. We are listener-supported radio. Listening to Major Powers and the Lo-Fi Symphony, and they're not a Queen tribute band. They're the inventors of what they call adventure rock. It may surprise you that all of this sound comes from a trio. You can see for yourself how three people can make this much music when they play at San Francisco's Café du Nord on Sunday. Music starts at 7 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.